ESPN 1530.
That's right. This is ESPN 1530. I'm James Erpine in for Mo for the next 3 hours. Thank you so much for tuning in right here on Cincinnati Sports Station. Plenty to get to. Oh, that's right. Plenty. Taryn Bland is today's producer on this holiday weekend edition, holiday weekend preview, where we're talking really all things Bengals for the next few hours. Might mix in some Reds, depending. Right now they have a 3-0 lead at Wrigley, which, beautiful weather. So hopefully you're headed to happy hour and we can make your day even better ahead of a holiday weekend with a little Bengals conversation. So let's start there as I tweet out a show link so maybe more Bengals fans and listeners can tune in. And let's start here. And again, James Erpine in for Mo with you for the next 3 hours. Let's start with Joe Burrow and the contract. Because I think that a lot of people look at this Joe Burrow contract and all of the discussion and dialogue and everything that's gone into it. And they say, just get it done. Just get it done. Come on, get it done. What's taking so long? Just get it done. He's the franchise. And I think the Bengals know that. I think Burrow knows that. I think we all know that. But there is some negotiating that needs to be done. And Taryn, let's flip it, by the way. Let's hear from Duke Tobin first. Just giving you a heads up. I'm not going to go to it yet. But working on the fly here. The Bengals know that. But like any big-time deal, there's still some negotiating. And I don't even want to call it negotiating because I think Burrow and his agent and the Bengals and the Bengals front office, they want to get something done. And so I think it's more dialogue than negotiating necessarily. So the dialogue between the two parties to find the right middle ground, I think has been really going for quite some time. And it was probably pre-free agency. They had some discussions. And it was, all right, let's try to get free agency done with, and then we're going to focus on the draft, and then we'll revisit this, and we'll get this done. And so now, I'm sure the dialogue has grown and continues to grow. And this is a clip of Duke Tobin on the Pat McAfee show on the contract, and there's a couple follow-ups here. It's about 2 minutes long. This is Duke Tobin yesterday on Pat McAfee in regards to the Joe Burrow contract extension.
And thankfully, Katie's on top of that one. She's the one that keeps us on track with the salary cap, not only for this year, but for future years. And so everything we do, we're looking now, but these dollars count. If you're not counting them this year, you're going to count them next year or the year after. So every dollar that goes out counts. So it's a pie. And just how big of a piece of the pie, you know, the only thing I can predict with the contract is it's going to be a sizable amount of money, and he's not going to be asking any of you for loans anytime soon.
Okay, so we're paying a lot of money.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay. He'll be paid well, and he's earned it. And, you know, what it looks like in its final state, you know, there's more than just the Bengals and Joe. It's Joe's agent. It's the union. It's a lot of factors that are outside of us that, you know, there's a lot of people that have interest in this. And Joe's great to work with, and I know Katie and his representation will get it worked out, and we'll go forward. But you know, we plan on Joe Burrow being here a long time. He's the straw that's stirring it right now.
Can you pay everybody now with this? How you can kick the can down the road? How we can kind of craft these salaries? What they're doing year after year to kind of move money into bonuses? Is it like, can you really keep your core together nowadays with the salary cap?
Well, that's the hope. And we'll see how it goes. You know, there's a mindset for this year, and there's a mindset for the future. And we're not giving up good players that we think can help us win this year because we might not be able to have them in the future. You know, so you've got to balance both. One thing that has to happen is you got to count the dollars at some point. And we're not looking to disappear here in a couple of years because, you know, we've done things that put us in a precarious spot. So we want to be mindful of this year And we want to be mindful of the future. We want to keep as many good players as we can. We know there's, you know, competition for them. When their contracts expire, they expire. And we have to be willing to replace them if we have to replace them. It's not the desire. We want the guys with life in their NFL career to finish here. You know, we want guys to stay here and be part of our community, a part of our team, a part of our legacy long term. You know, we want that. Doesn't always happen, but that's what we strive for.
That's Duke Tobin on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday. James Erpine in for Mo today on ESPN 1530. Okay. So, yes, they want to keep all their good players. But did you hear how he talked about Burrow, that first answer? It was when they get it done. And he's going to get a lot of money and all of those things. So, I think this is getting done. It's just a matter of when, and I felt that way for a long time. I continue to feel that way. But Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, threw out an idea. And a few weeks ago, I think it was last week. It might have been, I don't know. The days blend together. I'm not going to lie to you. Either last week or the week before, I was in for Mo, sitting in this chair, talking on this microphone, on these airwaves. And I said that the structure of the Burrow contract is what matters. That's what matters. Not, oh, the per year value. Will he take a few million less? Will it be the team friendly part is the structure. And so the structure is what I'm interested in. The number of years, what's guaranteed? Is it a long term deal or is it just a 4 year extension? All of those things. And Mike Florio threw out an idea that would be that is unprecedented, that could be groundbreaking from an NFL contract standpoint and future contract standpoint. This is Mike Florio, also on the Pat McAfee Show, discussing the potential of Joe Burrow taking a percentage of the cap, not necessarily an allotted amount, but a year-by-year percentage. This is Florio.
One of these guys is going to get a deal that pays him a percentage of the salary cap. And that's fair. That's the way to do it. We talk about leaving enough money aside for the rest of the team. Okay, let's not talk dollars. Let's talk 16%. I get 16 cents of every dollar, whatever the cap is. Then I don't have to worry about 3 years from now. My deal's obsolete. You know, Patrick Mahomes was the highest paid player in the NFL by $10 million a year just 3 years ago. Now he's $7 million a year behind Lamar Jackson. If you're tied into a percentage of the cap, that doesn't happen. And if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Joe Burrow. And if any owner's going to do it, it's going to be Mike Brown, who's been that contrarian that will do the thing that the league doesn't want teams to do. And the league doesn't want teams to do this. So I think it's lining up perfectly for Burrow to get a percentage of the cap. Mm. And that's the best way to solve this problem. Do a long-term deal and everyone wins.
I really like that idea. It's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He was on the Pat McAfee Show. James Rapine in for Mo. Here's why I like it. Because that might be the way you get Joe Burrow to take a long, long-term deal. A 10-year deal, 8-year extension, because he's got 2 years on his deal. I think that the max the Bengals would probably do is 8 more years. You lock him up for 10 years. Why would he want to sign that deal when it's going to be ancient in 2 to 3 years and he's going to be underpaid? Like, really underpaid based on the cap. Well, if you do a percentage of the cap every single year, you know what you're paying the quarterback. And you're still going to have the same percentage of cap to spend on other players. So it gives Burrow the peace of mind. It gives the Bengals the peace of mind. They know what they're spending, and Joe Burrow knows what he's getting. He's going to get the same amount of the pie year in and year out based on the cap. I think it makes sense. And the one thing, if there was a negotiating point with this Burrow extension, the one thing, if I'm them, that I would really, really try to do if I'm the Bengals, sign him to as many years as possible. If you want to go 10, go 10. If he's willing to go only 6, do 6, but man, hold out for more. And so if this could be the difference where it says, hey, Joe, if the cap goes up to $400 million, you're going to get 16% of that. If the salary cap goes up each and every year, you're going to continue to get pay raises. You're never going to be underpaid because it's going to be based on the cap. That is a good way to look at it. That doesn't mean you can't restructure. That doesn't mean you can't go down the line and go do different things. But the way the Bengals manage the cap, too, it's very tidy. It's very tidy how they manage their contracts. You notice they don't have to cut a lot. Like DeAndre Hopkins got cut today. And the Arizona Cardinals are eating a $22 million cap hit. Guess who would never, ever, ever, never, ever do that? The Cincinnati Bengals. Because they would never structure a deal that puts them in position to have a receiver on the wrong side of 30 making way more than he should on a team that is not contending. Like, you look across the league, there are a lot of teams that do not handle contracts the right way. The Bengals, it's very tidy is how I would describe it. And you can keep that tidiness and still pay Joe Burrow a hell of a lot of money by giving him a percentage of the cap each year. So if it goes up, and it will go up, and it continues to go up, he isn't underpaid. He's happy. The Bengals are happy because they could sign him to a long-term deal. I think this makes a lot of sense. I want to get to your calls at 513-749-1530. Also get to some of your tweets as well, at James Rapine. We are just getting started. Your calls are next as we continue to talk Bengals between now and 6 o'clock. James Rapine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. The Reds are cruising at Wrigley Field right now. That's your Reds update. Rolling. But we're talking Bengals. James Rapine in for Mo. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Let's continue to talk Joe Burrow and Bengals at 513-749-1530. And let's start with Jeff. You're first up on ESPN 1530. What's up, Jeff?
Absolutely love the percentage of contract idea. I think I talked about that with Sands one time. Have you ever talked about that with Andre at all?
We have not recently. Need to. I need to get Andre back on because it's time to revisit the contract stuff for sure.
Yeah, I think it's just an absolutely great idea if they could make something like that work. I mean, it just makes way too much sense. And sorry about that.
No, you're right. I think that's the way you keep Burrow long term. You know, where he signs for an 8-year deal, for example, and doesn't feel like he's getting shortchanged or leaving a ton of money on the table.
Yeah. Now, Duke's comment about the union is very, very interesting. I assume if D. Smith or one of his flunkies calls Katie, she hangs up the phone, right? They're only interacting with Joe's agent.
I would imagine that's the case. Yeah, I think it's that part was interesting. And that's part of it. It's not like Joe... You know, he may say, I'm going to sign this team-friendly deal because I'm going to be rich regardless. Well, that's fine, right. But you can't – you don't want to screw over the entire, you know, the quarterback market completely because he's at the top of it. So I do get it. There is a balance there, and the union's definitely involved.
Right. It's just like they were running the whole Lamar thing since he didn't have an agent. Ring of Honor, I voted Lamar and Boomer. I'm kind of hoping the heavy weighting towards the charter season ticket members carries Lamar like he carried Ike last year. That would be awesome for me. I think it's going to be really interesting. And I don't mind Mo's idea at all of just put Lap in. Just take him out of the picture altogether and just put him in.
Yeah, I think it's really tough because there's so many guys that should be in. And, you know, you look at their on-field accolades and you want to get those guys in, and yet Lap, of course, should be in. And for everything he's meant to the franchise, including the on the field, of course. And if you could put three in and during one year, that'd be great. If he was part of the inaugural class, that would have been nice too. And instead, it's going by the vote. The thing is with all 13 guys, Jeff, they should all be in. And it's just a matter of how long it takes to get them all in. They would all be in if the Ring of Honor existed 30 years ago. They'd be in by now, all of them.
Yeah. The one guy I'd like to see pop up on the list sooner rather than later is Phil Samp. He was the original radio guy.
Yep.
And he was just unbelievable, and he deserves to be on there at some point in time. And I'm with you on the Heat. I went the money line tomorrow night, and I went for them to win the series 4-2. Obviously, if they don't win tomorrow night, whenever the next game in Boston is going to be, is likely to be a bloodbath. But I'm with you on the Heat, definitely.
Yeah, that one's – it's tough, but I don't know if the Heat are going to lay another egg. I think they're going to come out and play hard and play their style
and they're at home. It feels like even though they're dinged up. And by the way, if they weren't dealing with so many injuries, I think they would have already ended the series. I think that it just happened at the perfect time for Boston, and Boston's so talented that they built some momentum.
Yep, absolutely agreed. Have a great long weekend, James. I saw a cute picture of the young lady in the pool today. So get that pool time in this weekend, definitely.
No doubt. We're going to do that, Jeff. Enjoy the weekend as well. I appreciate the call, as always.
Yep.
Good stuff there from Jeff in Virginia. Let's keep things rolling. James Erpine in for Mo with Mike in Los Angeles. What's up, Mike?
James, never gotten to speak to you. Well, maybe once. But,
yeah, it's been a while, Mike. How you doing?
I admire your work, brother. You do good. You do very, very good work.
Appreciate you.
I appreciate it. Oh, you deserve it, brother. You do a good job, hell of a job. In my 70 young years, I've seen a lot of sports writers, read a lot of sports writers, and I'm not saying you're in the top two or three, but you do a hell of a job, man.
Thank you.
And you know as well as I do, I have no vested interest in saying this. So.
No, I appreciate that.
That's just from my heart. I wanted to talk about Hopkins getting let go, and then I wanted to address the Heat thing. What I'm hearing on the other network, because I jump around.
Yep.
Even though Tony and Mo think I just listen to them exclusively, but I don't. I've got five sports talks to shows at any one time in SoCal. So Hopkins gets whacked.
Yeah.
Now they're saying ideally Chiefs, Jets, or possibly the Saints, because Gruden's going down now to be the quarterback coach for Carr.
Oh.
What do you think?
I would be surprised if he went to New Orleans. I think the Jets is really interesting, and if you get Aaron Rodgers, they were obviously in on Odell. If you get Aaron Rodgers in on that recruiting process, I could see that being a possibility. I think the Chiefs should far and away be the favorite because they are missing. Everyone says, Mike, oh, well, the Chiefs did it without Tyreek Hill, and you don't need these weapons. The Chiefs were starving for weapons last year, and they wanted to add more. I know they still want it, but they wanted to add more weapons, so it would not shock me one bit. If they get DeAndre Hopkins. And then the other one, I don't think Baltimore has necessarily the targets Hopkins would be looking for, but I would not be shocked if they get in the mix. And the other one is the Browns as well, because you have the Deshaun Watson connection with DeAndre Hopkins, might be willing to pursue that. So I think there's going to be a lot of teams now that he's released that look at it and say, hey, it's interesting. Right.
That's an excellent point. I can't believe I didn't think about Watson. That's the best point I've heard all day. And I've been listening to a lot of sports talk shows all over.
I think that they're a sneaky one.
I don't want the Browns to get Hopkins. I don't want the Browns to get Hopkins.
I think he can still play. Yeah, I think he can still play.
Does he have an attitude problem or something? He didn't practice? Or was that just an Arizona thing?
No, I don't think that was him at all. I think that they're... I think the Cardinals are a dumpster fire, Mike, and they want to reset. And with the way his contract was, they couldn't find someone to take on the contract without asking for some help, to cap help, so to speak. So it was one of those situations where they just decided to release him and take the cap hit now.
I'm with you with the Heat to change venues. I'm with the Heat and. I'll tell you, I never dreamt when these playoffs started that the absence of Gabe Vincent would make a big deal. But it's a
huge
did,
deal
because
yes.
it screwed up Spoelstra's whole substitution program, because now Lowry has to start. He's a shell of his old self, but when he spot plays, he's effective. So that was a big deal. Is he coming back? Is Vincent coming back?
I think so. I kind of looked into that a little bit this morning, and it sounds like it's trending in that direction. But I agree with you. Kyle Lowry was awful at the start of that game. The turnover where he passed on the jumper at the top of the key, the long two, and he tries to throw it in for a layup, and it would have been a pick six by two different cornerbacks if for a football reference. I mean, and it turns into the fast break the other way. I mean, that's when I was like, oh God, like just take the shot, man. So. I agree with you. I think Gabe Vincent coming back, even if he's not 100%, is huge for the Heat. And I do think he's going to play.
And Spoelstra's playing with a wounded spot anyway. So then to lose him, if Spoelstra can pull this off now, or if the team can, that'll be quite a feather in their hat. Thanks for the time, James. I appreciate it.
Mike, appreciate you. Have a good holiday weekend, and appreciate you chatting. Yeah, I actually had that DeAndre Hopkins stuff planned, and we might as well talk about it here for a second, because there are a couple destinations that if you're the Bengals, you do not want to see DeAndre Hopkins land. And it's real easy to say, he's on the wrong side of 30, 700 yards last year. It's still DeAndre Hopkins. And in the right situation, can DeAndre Hopkins be a game changer? I still think so. Right? And let's say you're saying no. Okay, so would you be excited if the Bengals signed him to a league minimum deal? Of course you would, because he's still got something left. You'd be excited about it. I'm not saying the Bengals are interested. Of course they're not. But the team, maybe at league minimum, the teams that that would be interested, and by the way, James Rapine in for Mo today here on ESPN 1530, that should concern you, would certainly concern me if I'm the Bengals. Kansas City? Yeah, I don't want Patrick Mahomes having someone like that to throw to, DeAndre Hopkins. I don't want to have to worry about that when we're talking about deep playoff runs. Buffalo, Von Miller tweeting out a few hours ago, eyeball emoji, Buffalo would certainly be interested and is probably making calls to DeAndre Hopkins' agent. The Baltimore Ravens, absolutely in the mix, I would say, even though they have Odell, even though they drafted the kid out of Boston College, you know, you can never have enough weapons. And I think they may overcorrect and just try to get as many as they can after not giving Lamar anything to throw to for years and years and years. The Browns, also in the mix. The Jets, it's so many AFC teams that could be in the mix because it's an arm race in the AFC. Arm race. And I'm going to get to this at some point today, probably at 4 o'clock, because we have Mike Petraglia of CLNS Media coming up in a few minutes here. It's an arms race. So if the Bengals want to continue to load up and battle in the AFC, and they're one of the best teams in the conference, no doubt, but you want to load up. We know how close it is to winning and losing in late January in these big games. The difference could be one play with one player. So what free agent should the Bengals go after? That's a question I'm going to pose to you. I already asked it on Twitter, at James Rapine. But could an NFC team get in the mix? I mean, could the Cowboys be interested? Like, can one of these NFC teams step up and take DeAndre Hopkins? Because I look at it, and it's a bunch of AFC teams. It's a bunch of AFC teams that make sense. The Jets make sense for DeAndre Hopkins. The Browns make sense. The Chiefs make sense. All of these teams. And so that's where I'm at, is which NFC teams could potentially go after a DeAndre Hopkins. And I don't see many that make sense. Like, would the Eagles do it? They already have plenty of good receivers. The Vikings, they drafted a receiver in round one. The Lions, that one's interesting. Does DeAndre Hopkins view the Lions as a true contender? Because if so, that would make a lot of sense. A lot of sense from a football standpoint. And then outside of that, I know Mike mentioned the Saints. That doesn't really do it for me. Maybe the San Francisco 49ers. That's the other one. And I know they have a question at quarterback, but a couple teams, just looking at these NFC teams, that would make some sense. Lions, 49ers. I don't think the Bears would be in the mix, but maybe they would, but not many, right? Tom Brady's no longer in Tampa Bay. If Brady was there, you'd be like, oh, well, yeah, Hopkins. It'd be easy. So if he goes to the AFC, it looks like it's going to impact the Bengals, because it's either going to be a division rival or an AFC championship contender like the Bills, like the Chiefs. And so the Bengals, they might have been put in a tough position here by DeAndre Hopkins getting released by the Arizona Cardinals earlier today. We'll continue that discussion in a bit, but up next, Mike Petraglia, CLNS Media, is going to join us to talk all things Bengals. I'm James Rapine, in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. James Rapine, in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. Let's keep the Bengals conversation rolling with Mike Petraglia, CLNS Media. .com, host of the Jungle Roar podcast as well. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Trags. And Trags, I appreciate the time, my man. How you doing?
got my lawn cut, and I'm heading into Memorial Day weekend with some momentum. So I'm very, very pleased that I've gotten something done today.
Love it. Cold one popped yet or no?
No. I saved that for the weekend.
Not well, it's about to be the weekend, Trags, but that's okay. I get it.
Yeah, I understand that, but I have to pace myself, James. I'm not a young buck like you are.
There we go. Yeah, pacing yourself. All right. Well, let's start with this theory. I'll say theory idea that Mike Florio came up with. I'm sure you saw it. I played the audio earlier this hour, but the idea that the Bengals would sign Joe Burrow to a long-term extension and the contract would vary year to year based on the cap and what the cap would be. And he would essentially get 16% of the cap each year. And as the cap rises, his salary would rise. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's foul? What do you make of that idea?
Creative. And as I've said many times before, and you've heard me say this, I don't think anybody manages the cap any better than the Blackburns. And they are very, very litigious when it comes to making sure that all of their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed when it comes to cap responsibility. And I think if Joe Burrow's in for it and it makes the Bengals' job of keep retaining talent for him easier, then I think he's all for it. Remember, the key, I think, for Joe Burrow is how much money does he get upfront guaranteed. To me, that's really the big, big deciding factor in when this deal gets done, I think. I don't have any inside information on that, but just given the history of other contracts similar to this, I think the more you guarantee early on in the contract, the better the chance that you're going to sign the player. And in this particular case, I think Burrow has been very forthcoming in saying that he wants to work with the team to retain as much talent as possible, because as he told us a couple of weeks ago, it doesn't do the quarterback any good if he doesn't have good players to throw the ball to.
Trags, you go back and you've been following this team. You go back and much farther back than I do. Yeah, that's an age joke that I'm going to continue to make. You go way back. But one of the points that Florio made was that if anyone was willing to do a deal based on the salary cap, despite the NFL not wanting it to happen because it is unprecedented and it does kind of change the way – I mean, it could completely change the way we view at least quarterback contracts moving forward. It would be Mike Brown. I hear that, and I kind of agree. And I think he may look at this and say, this is the way that we could keep him around, not for 4 years, but for 8 years. And I think that's the key for the Bengals. It's not the money. The money is the money. We kind of know what he's going to make per year and all of those things. And you're right, the guaranteed money.
It's the guaranteed money, though, James. There's the money, and then there's the guaranteed money.
No doubt.
And I think – I mean, that's significant. And, you know, let's not pretend that it's not. Now, the annual average value, that can be played with. I see your point there.
Yeah, but my point is with Mike, is he may look at it and say, I get it, Roger might not want me to do this, but this is what's best for us, and this is what's going to make Joe Burrow happy. Obviously, the guaranteed money aspect of it matters. And I think we kind of know what he's going to get guaranteed-wise. He's going to get more. Then his contract is probably going to be more guaranteed money. Let me think about this as I'm saying it. Actually, I agree, especially if it's a long-term deal, like 8 years, which is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Try to find a way to get that done. He's going to get more guaranteed money than Deshaun Watson did because it's double the length. Like, I don't think that's crazy.
I think that's accurate. I have thought all along that he is probably – if those are the parameters – okay, and if that's the benchmark, then you're looking at $240 million guaranteed, $240 to $250. The question becomes, of course, James, do the Bengals have that kind of cash on hand?
Yes.
And that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because as everybody knows by now, you have to have that money in escrow to be able to pay for the size of contract this is. You have to be able to pay the player up front with the cash in escrow. And if it's not, then you can't guarantee that much money.
Mike Petralia is our guest, CLNS Media, James Erpine, in for Mo. What do you mean, Trags? they have sponsorships on every gate now. There's a sponsor on your desk at Paycor Stadium. Of course they have the money.
Yes.
I actually don't worry about that. I think they have the money. I think there was a concern a few years ago, and then they were like, all right, let's get this thing going, and they got it going. And that stadium money, all of the sponsorship deals, I think they're good to go.
Well, then, if they're good to go, then...
And maybe I'm wrong. Indeed. I'm speculating. It's not like Katie called me and told me that. I'm clearly speculating.
We're both speculating here because nobody keeps their numbers closer to the vest than the Blackburns, and for good reason. I mean, they should do that. They're among the best business people in sports, and people, you know, on the outside of Cincinnati will hear that and laugh, but they are. They negotiate as... smartly as any owners in sport. Now, that has not always produced winning teams. I think they'll also acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to beat the Blackburns and the Brown family at the bargaining table. You're just not going to do it. And that's why Katie is regarded as one of the best cap experts and CBA experts in the National Football League. It's why she's on so many committees at the NFL, because she is well respected.
Yeah.
You know, the deal's going to get done. The Joe Burrow deal will get done. It will be, to your point and to Florio's point, fascinating to see if the Bengals set a new standard in NFL negotiating for paying a player a certain percentage of the cap.
The Cardinals released DeAndre Hopkins, and that's my interesting segue into T. Higgins. Not necessarily saying, hey, T. Higgins is going to get released, because he will not. But do you think the Bengals keep him around? Let's say in 2025, do they keep him around and sign him to a long-term extension?
Yes. I think they, first of all, they know T. Higgins. Second of all, if you believe the reports that were out this week, they regard T. Higgins as an elite number one type receiver. And I happen to agree with them in their player evaluation of said player. I think T. Higgins is a rare commodity, and he is a proven commodity. You hold on to him, and you do everything you can to hold on to him. The obvious, catch point here, the tripping point, is David Mulugeta. Can you finally get a deal done with a David Mulugeta client? And I think they can, but they're going to have to show T the money, and it's going to be north of 100. It's going to be, a nine-figure contract. I don't think there's any question about that. Again, it'll probably come down to years and amount of money guaranteed.
Mike Petralia, CLNS Media, host of the Jungle Roar podcast, is our guest. James Erpine in for Mo today on ESPN 1530. All right, so from that, one of their own, T. Higgins, to maybe a veteran that they could sign, is there a veteran out there, free agent-wise, that makes sense to you that the Bengals should target? Because I look at this AFC, Trags, and it's an arms race. I mean, it is so dang talented. There's so many great quarterbacks. DeAndre Hopkins is probably going to end up in the AFC. I could see him going to Kansas City or Buffalo or in the division. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces, so I don't think you can ever have enough talent, and obviously the Bengals are one of the top teams in the conference. Do you think that they should add another veteran, and if so, who comes to mind?
Are you talking specifically about receiver position?
No, free agents in general.
Okay, running back, Zeke Elliott. Didn't we hear so much?
There
was so much smoke about Zeke, when he became a free agent, that he would make so much sense as a pass protector in front of Joe Burrow. I still think the Joe Mixon situation is fluid. I don't think there's anything guaranteed about his roster position. I do think that they've been, but I still don't believe it'll be at $12.8 million a year. I just don't see, Mike, based on what we just said 5 minutes ago, I don't see the Browns and the Blackburns paying that kind of cash to Joe Mixon. But, maybe this is one of those cases where Mike steps in and says, we've been true to Joe Mixon. Mixon's been loyal to us. I want to keep him. But that being said, if Zeke Elliott at age 28 has anything left in the tank, mm-hmm. and he can still run and he can still pass protect, He makes to me the most sense of anybody on that list.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Zeke would be a really good fit in Cincinnati. Let's go from current Bengals to past Bengals and Bengals legends. The Bengals announced their Ring of Honor nominees for this year, 13 nominees. Like I said, you go way, 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 way back. So which two, if you had a vote, Trags, would you vote in?
I think this is pretty easy this year to me. Boomer Esiason, 1988 NFL MVP, led the Bengals to the 12-4 season, Super Bowl 23, came within 34 seconds of a Super Bowl title, was really the spearhead, the tip of the spear, if you will, of one of the most creative offenses in the National Football League. Really, the original no huddle offense before the K-Gun in Buffalo, it was Boomer Esiason running Sam Weiss's offense. To me, Boomer Esiason's a no-brainer. I mean, he would be the choice. The next one to me is a personal favorite, and that's Leapin' Lamar Parrish. I know people talk rightfully so about Ken Riley being a Hall of Famer, which he is going to be later this summer in Canton. But when you take a look at the numbers that Lamar Parrish had over his career, and mostly in Cincinnati, had 47 interceptions, I believe 38 of them in Cincinnati. He was a four-time Pro Bowler, three of those appearances in Cincinnati. Two appearances while he was with the Bengals before he got traded to Washington, an All-Pro, two appearances as an All-Pro. I just think, and one of the premier punt returners in the National Football League. Anybody who remembers Leapin' Lamar like I do remembers how electric he was when he caught the ball on a punt return. And everybody stopped what they were doing. And you know, everybody remembers the Chicago Bears punt returner of a couple of years ago, you know,
Devin
actually
Hester.
About 15 years. Yes. And to me, he was Devin Hester before Devin Hester. He was that electric. It's Lamar Parrish. He's my other choice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Trags, that's why we bring you on, because you offer great perspective. Thanks for jumping on ahead of a Memorial Day weekend. And pop a cold one for me now. It is the weekend. I'm in here. You're not. You're in the sun. Enjoy it, my man. Thanks for coming on.
All right, James. Take care. Always a pleasure.
Good stuff there from Mike Petralia, CLNS Media, host of the Jungle Roar podcast. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Trags. Really good stuff. And that, just like that, Taren Bland, an hour in the books. Up next, well, I have some thoughts on free agency. We'll get to some Bengals Ring of Honor as well. The Reds, well, they're rolling. 7-0 over the Cubs. So let's continue this Bengals conversation next. James Erpine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530.
Are you ready for some football?
Hi, this is Dan Hoare. Join Dave Lapham and me for every play of every game on the official home of the Bengals, ESPN 1530.
It's 4:07. James Erpine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you so much for tuning in ahead of what should be a really fun holiday weekend. Right now, well, the Reds rolling in Chicago. Rolling, and I hope that continues, and I certainly hope that your weekend is off to a great start as you head to happy hour. Make sure you're safe, sound, and have a great Memorial Day weekend. That said, let's talk Bengals. And there's a lot of different topics I have planned. You're going to hear from Dax Hill, the Bengals' starting safety, first-round pick, an interview I had with him recently. You're going to hear some of that coming up in about 10 minutes or so. But I want to start with something this hour, at least, with something that I posed on Twitter today, at James Erpine. And it's pretty simple. What free agent would you target if you're the Bengals and try to add to the team? Because with DeAndre Hopkins now released, if you didn't see that, DeAndre Hopkins was released by the Cardinals. And it's an arms race. And so he's going to go somewhere, probably AFC. I look at it, I think the Chiefs are in the mix and have expressed interest. I could see the Patriots, the Bills, the Ravens, the Browns, and I'm not going to go into exactly why I think those are potential suitors for DeAndre Hopkins. And maybe he doesn't sign with any of those teams. But one of the Bengals' rivals could be getting better. And the Bengals are one of the best teams, have one of the best rosters in the conference. It would be nice to add another piece. So where would they add it? And so the poll question was, is there a free agent that you want the Bengals to sign ahead of training camp? And if so, who? That doesn't mean they need to sign this guy tomorrow, but at some point between now and when training camp starts in late July. And the three guys I put out there, and I'll read some comments, and over 1,600 people have voted. The first one was Dalton Risner, who is a guard out of Denver. Over 41% of people want Dalton Risner, who I would assume would compete with Cordell Volson for that starting left guard job. 32.2% of people want Yannick Ngakoue, the pass rusher. He's bounced around the league, but is a really good edge rusher, certainly good at getting to the quarterback. 23.5% of people say Ezekiel Elliott, and 3% say other, and have named a bunch of different names, and there aren't many that stand out. A few did say DeAndre Hopkins, which, sure, league minimum, would you take him? Of course you would. That's just not going to make sense. It doesn't line up. So Zeke, Ngakoue, Risner. I look at this Bengals roster, and they have a lot of edges as is. They've allocated a lot of resources to the defensive line. Are they really going to spend money on another edge? They're paying Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard big money. They just drafted an edge in the first round in Miles Murphy. I look at the Bengals offensive line. They are spending big money on Orlando Brown Jr. They are spending at the guard position on Alex Kappa. Spending at center, interior offensive line with Ted Karras. All veterans, all on free agent contracts that they've added within the past year. That doesn't mention the Jonah Williams money, the Lyle Collins money. So yes, Cordell Volson is a fourth-round rookie, or was a fourth-round rookie, now entering his second year on a rookie contract. He's not making a lot of money. That's your one bargain, like real bargain. Now, Orlando Brown Jr., compared to what I thought he was going to get, is a bargain, but it's still a lot of money. And so I actually think, out of all the spots, offensive line, defensive end at least, you could say defensive tackle, and we did get some of those with Matt Ioannidis, which could make sense as a three-tech interior defensive lineman. But of all the spots, which one did they not replace in free agency or not replace in the draft? Samaje Perine, the running back that can pass block at a really, really high level, that gives you something in the passing game, and that can be a competent short yardage runner. Samaje Perine. That is Ezekiel Elliott at this stage of his career. He is a good short yardage back. He has good hands, and he is a great pass blocker. So of all of these guys, of all the guys on the market, it might not be the most valuable position. There might be other guys that you think are better at this stage of their career at their respective positions. But from a fit standpoint, I agree with the 23.5% that say Ezekiel Elliott. Plugs right in. Maybe that's with Joe Mixon. Maybe that's without Joe Mixon. Regardless of what the Bengals' plan is there, he fits. Because you better believe a Joe Mixon-Zeke Elliott combo works. And I think it works at a very high level with Chase Brown as your three. And a Chase Brown-Zeke Elliott combo with Travion Williams as your three also works if you want to spend less resources, less money, save cap space, and move on from Joe Mixon. Whatever the case is, it would work. And so I just want to make it very, very clear that if there was one that makes sense to me, and maybe it's not Zeke, maybe you go with a Kareem Hunt for cheaper, but the Bengals are a destination now. And as I look at these guys, they're spending a lot of money in the trenches. May not feel like it all the time. They are spending a lot of resources and putting those resources into getting after opposing quarterbacks and protecting Joe Burrow. The one thing that they haven't replaced that left, they replaced Eli Apple. They replaced the safeties that left in free agency, Jesse Bates and Von Bell. They haven't replaced Samaje Perine. And some may say, oh, well, Chase Brown is. I don't know if you're trusting a rookie to pass block. I think that's a lot to ask. And maybe that's as simple as saying, no, Travion Williams is that guy. Or Chris Evans is going to have a bigger role this year. But are any of those options as proven as Ezekiel Elliott? No, he would instantly walk in and be their best pass protector. Best. Better than Travion Williams, better than Joe Mixon, better than Chase Brown, better than Chris Evans. Instantly. So what does he want? I think that's the big question. He can't want a lot right now, right? Running back market stinks. He didn't run great last year. It wasn't a great year. I think he was fine. It's funny. I think his reputation of being a star back is hurting him now from a public perception standpoint because people think he just stinks. Ezekiel Elliott doesn't stink. He's just not what he once was, which is fine. You don't need 2017 Ezekiel Elliott. What he can give you in 2023 is exactly what you need, which is a guy who can be on the field for 35% of the snaps, pass protect when you need him to, catch some passes out of the backfield, be a short yardage back for a bit. Just another option in the backfield. I think it makes a lot of sense. Get to your calls on this. What free agent would you sign? Again, the top three, Dalton Risner, 41% in the pool, Yannick Ngakoue, 32%, Zeke getting the bronze medal at 23%. What free agent would you sign if you're the Bengals? Would you sign one? Or do you think they're good to go? 513-749-1530 is how you could chime in. Also get to your tweets as well, at James Rapine. We'll get to your calls. And up next, you're going to hear from a Bengals first round pick from 2022. A man that's going to start for the Bengals at safety this year. A one-on-one interview with Dax Hill coming your way next, right here on ESPN 1530. Reds are rolling. And Hunter Green had his best outing of the season. Six innings, no hits. Reds leading 7-0. We'll see if the bullpen can hold up at Wrigley, but that would be a nice win for the Redlegs to cap off or to start off a holiday weekend in Chicago. By the way, Chad Dotson, Cincinnati Magazine, going to join us in at 5:05 to discuss this matchup and discuss some Reds. But let's continue the Bengals conversation. James Rapine in for Mo. And I was able to catch up with Bengals safety Dax Hill. And Dax was obviously a first-round pick last year and had to line up all over the field, played cornerback, played outside corner, nickel corner, safety some, was on special teams. It was tough with Jesse Bates and Von Bell in town. And those guys are no longer in town. And so I caught up with Dax Hill, and I started off by asking him how valuable it was to move around and play three different spots on defense as a rookie.
Yeah, I feel like that's like the biggest takeaway that I, you know, can take from, you know, from my rookie season. I'm not really knowing what I was going to do, but being thrown in those different positions allows me to, you know, feel more comfortable and allow myself to, you know, be more confident and more fluid out there on the field. So I feel like that's like the biggest thing that I feel like, you know, just having a positive mindset about it, because, you know, not coming in and, you know, not going it the way you want it to, you have to find that positivity somewhere. So I feel like that's what I, you know, I take away from it. But I've never been, you know, in this situation. I have, you know, but not quite like it in terms of, you know, someone going down and, you know, being, you know, on strings, not knowing where exactly I'm going to be at. So I am versatile, but just the way it went down, that's something I'm not used to or wasn't used to. So, but it was all good. Like, you know, I can, you know, whatever I can do, I'm going to do it. So,
yeah, there aren't many five-star top safety Gatorade player of the years that get moved around. They get put in the spot. I think, was there ever a time where, and I get it, you're versatile, where that was even remotely a possibility? Was it always safety? I know you played corner some, and part of the safety's responsibility can be the nickel, but overall, you played safety, right? And so that was a pretty big change.
I feel like it was just really a God-given talent. Just whenever I started playing football, you know, I could play offense, defense, whatever that may be. I feel like that was more of just how I was as a player. So whatever position that was, like on the actually playing on the field, it would be like I could play it, but it would take time for me to get acclimated to that position. You know, if say it was someone else, I'm not trying to compare myself to anyone else, but say if someone else came in and was at a different spot, not expecting to play a certain spot, they probably wouldn't been able to adjust to that new position. It's just different perspectives you have to, you know, keep in mind while you're playing football. So try to keep an open mind and, you know, just have fun with it as much as I can.
Let's get into the offseason a bit. I certainly noticed the first time I saw you when you were back that you were a little more cut, had maybe a little bit more muscle. You mentioned that. Is that goal number one? What are your list of offseason goals? And what are you doing to add weight?
I'm really just, you know, keeping the same schedule. I don't really try to put pressure on myself to, you know, I have to be this weight or I have to look a certain way coming up this season. Like, I just always try to be myself in terms of how I approach, like, the off season or just working out in general. So I just wanted to do a little bit more in terms of just how I train and, you know, looking, you know, a little bit different. I just wanted to see a change, you know, from rookie season to my second year. So it was really kind of just I wanted to improve all in all. Like, it wasn't like I have to look a certain way, but just really just seeking improvement.
What's your weight training schedule look like, your workout schedule? Like, what do you do and when do you do it?
Like, during the off season?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
During the off season, it was so I was in Tampa for about a month. So that schedule was about 4 days a week. I would train an hour, hour and a half each day. And then that fifth day, I would either be doing some type of recovery or some type of, you know, massage, making sure my, you know, my bones and muscles, all that's intact. So it wasn't, you know, a lot during the week because I didn't really want to, you know, put a lot of just a lot of different, you know, workouts. And I just wanted to, you know, make it all, you know, fit to what I wanted to do. So it wasn't a lot. It was good work at the same time.
What do you do? Like, I love working out and so I'm into this. So sorry that I'm peppering you with questions here, but like, are you going in and squatting a ton? Obviously there's a video of Jamar where he's power cleaning, you know, a lot of guys go into the weight room and bench press, but what do professional safeties do? Because I'm sure it's different than what the average person is doing at the gym.
I can't really speak for other safeties, but for myself, I try to just have a good combination of, you know, upper body and lower body strength. You know, whatever, I train with a great trainer down in Tampa. So I was kind of really just on his schedule and what I communicated with him in terms of what I wanted, but it was kind of just more of a focal point of just focusing on my lower body. You know, my upper body is always going to be there, but my lower body is something that I've always not had issues with, but knew I could, you know, critique a little bit more on my lower body. And so that was kind of what that was.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense. Leg day.
Yeah, leg day,
right?
Had a upper body looking stronger than a lower body. So
what would, just looking ahead to this season, and obviously you're at the stadium training through this offseason in activities and stuff like that right now with the team. But what would an ideal 2023 season look like for you? Obviously, you want to win a Super Bowl team-wise, win the division, win the get a first-round bye, all of those things. But individually, I know it wasn't ideal as a rookie. This year, it looks different. Feels like you're going to play much more on defense. What's an ideal season for Dax Hill?
Really just competing at a high level. You know, every week or, you know, whenever I was in high school, college, whenever I started playing football, it was really just competing at a high level. Not really, you know, setting I really don't even have goals right now. That's a bad thing. But, you know, I'm going to eventually get to that point where I'm going to set goals for myself for the season. But really just competing with my teammates, my new teammates, teammates that came in and really just being a contributor. You know, just doing the best I can, you know, for the team, being a team player and, you know, not really just, you know, focusing on myself. But like you said, Super Bowl and all that's good, but really just doing whatever I can just to help the team.
Let's talk about some of those teammates because the secondary it's getting younger and younger. Guys, I certainly think you're familiar with. Let's start with your college teammate, DJ Turner, Juan Drago, who That's like the coolest name ever, I would say, for a football player. What do you call DJ?
Sometimes I call him DJ. Sometimes I call him Drago. Just different names. Whatever comes to mind. You know, there's so many different things you could call him nowadays. I mean, a lot of people didn't even know that was his name. It came at me. They were like, "That's his real name." I'm like, "Yeah, that's his real name." I'm like, "You might as well ask him for yourself." Like, he's right there. Like, but he's his name is all over the place around the locker room now. So
he brings the speed. 4.26. You bring the speed, right? I know it was a little. I don't even want to say slower, but it was sub 4.4. What did you run? A 4.38, I think.
Something like that.
Have you ever beat him in a race?
We've never raced, so that's okay. Something, you know, we have to tune into probably here in the next year. You know, somebody.
You think you could?
Something like that, huh?
Do you think you could beat him in a race?
I feel like I didn't even run my fastest, though. For some reason, I felt slow that day. It was a long combine, so I felt like I was a little bit.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hey,
thanks so much. Dax Hill, and that was me talking with Chick Ludwig, who is in for Lance tonight on 700 WLW. That said, we'll get to your calls at 513-749-1530. James Erpine in for Mo, and well, we have plenty of ahead, including Bengals legend Willie Anderson. So stay tuned and keep it locked right here on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. James Erpine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. Reds continue to roll in Chicago. We'll have the latest on them and keep you updated throughout that game. But we're talking Bengals right now. And I had the pleasure of catching up with Willie Anderson, Bengals legend, Ring of Honor, hopefully future Hall of Famer. And he actually has a camp that he tweeted about, at Big Willie 7179, a camp for all high school offensive linemen looking to learn more about the game and techniques and workout regimen, all of those things. And so make sure you check it out. He tweeted it out, a link. It's at Lakota East High School next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, May 30th and 31st. So sign up today with promo code PROMO and you save a bunch of money and get literally the best direction and guidance you could get if you're an offensive lineman, a high school offensive lineman in the area. That said, I caught up with Willie and asked him a bunch. This entire interview is on my YouTube channel, Cincinnati Bengals Talk. But I asked him about Jonah Williams in this Jonah Williams situation, because Jonah got demoted and played on a knee that was clearly a major issue last year. And I just think his Q rating is about as low as it could be right now. And I think Willie Anderson had some interesting thoughts to share, not only on Jonah, but the Bengals Ring of Honor as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a natural thing. Like, you know, we all have self-pride first as players. You know what I mean? I did get replaced. I did, you know, hear about, you know, during the offseason, going to that 2008 season, I think, you know, 2007 season, that my backup, Stacey Andrews, was getting franchised. And going into my last season, that training camp, they told me I wasn't going to be a starter. And I was like, wow, like, what? Like I left OTAs and went home. Like, I didn't come back to workouts. Like, I was, like, you know, devastated. Because I'm like, hold on, man, all these years of me playing hurt and being in the trenches and these losing seasons we had, I never tapped out. I stayed playing my tail off. Like, I'm going to get treated like this? Like, okay, so, but, you know, but it's business, man. You know, it's business, and it's a cruel business. And as a player, you learn that. And sometimes fans don't get it, because the fans are not sometimes inside of the buildings and privy to the conversations. And, you know what I mean? And, you know, and, you know, if we had social media when I got cut, I probably made a big fit. Like, oh, what, me? You about to cut me? Like, after what I've done, like, you know, the loyalty, I thought I'd stay here. But it is what it is, man. But I think self-pride is the first thing that guys have. But I'll tell Jonah this, wherever you at, let's just regroup. Let's regroup. Like I said, I train linemen now for, you know, this is my business. I started this business, you know what I mean? And I love the business. And one of the biggest things we do is I try to help change linemen's mindsets. And the biggest thing right now for him is to not let any of this stuff right now, wherever you play at, you want to be a starter and go out there and get a chance to redeem yourself. Because the NFL now is about, you know, you play right now. Hey, man, teams need linemen. This is a passing league. It's all about these quarterbacks and these freaking monsters they have trying to kill them. So everyone is trying to find bodyguards and find protectors. If you can get on that field and show that you can do that, there are people who want to pay you a lot of money. And so I won't let the business part get me down too much. Wherever you're at, you want to be starting. And I think, I think fans have to understand that guys have self-pride. I know Jonah, like I say, playing through injuries, and no one ever gives linemen credit for playing through injuries. Like, I played through 1,000 injuries. Like, no one cares. They don't care if your big toe is this big and swollen in your shoe and you can't move and you're facing a freaking monster like Myles Garrett. Like, people with linemen, I say all the time, like, if you put, I'm not gonna say me, because I always use me in the analogy. I'm not telling a story, but I'm gonna say today's guys. If you put Jonas and the Bengals linemen in foot races and say, okay, fans, everybody, media, you're gonna bet all your money on who's gonna win this race. You got Myles Garrett, Jonah Williams, you got the rest of the Bengals line, Lyle Collins versus TJ Watts. You're gonna run races. Like, win a race. Everyone would bet 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100, that the old lineman would lose every foot race against those guys. But when you turn it around and say, hey, we're gonna pass the ball 40 times. If you get beat one time, you're terrible.
Yeah.
Like that's the life of a lineman, bro. You know what I mean? So no one cares if he got a knee, you know, the knee injury. But we as former linemen, we know how hard it is to play with anything wrong with your kneecap. It's unbelievable. You know what I mean? So I understand it. It's a business, man. I hope people understand it with him. I think wherever he's at, hope his mindset is ready to come in and show he's ready to play wherever it is. If it's left, right, for the Bengals, not with the Bengals, whoever. But I think don't allow the business part to sour you professionally doing your job. It's my advice. You know, so.
Yeah, I think he'll likely be here, and I think we will see him for mandatory minicamp because, well, his contract is there, and you're not going to want to miss out and get fined money-wise. As you know, that's not that's not ideal. Last question here for you, Willie. The Bengals Ring of Honor voting was officially became underway this week. It lasts until June 9th. You were inducted last year. I can read the nominees for you if you want. There's 13 nominees, but who do you think should get in this year? It's tough because I think all 13 should be in. And some should have went in when you were still playing because they played in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, and so we're playing catch up. But if you had to pick two, could you? And if so, who?
I could not pick two. I've been one of the ones that saying that it should be eight a year to be catch up. You know,
catch up. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because like you say, those guys should have been in 30 years ago, bro. Like,
yeah,
I should have seen guys when I was playing for the Bengals looking up and saying, oh, who is that guy right there? Who is that guy? You know what I mean? But we never had that, and I'm so happy they're doing it now. Elizabeth is leading a great charge. The whole week is a great event they do. And the best part of the event to me is the Legends Dinner the night before the game. Mm-hmm. Where all the players come back. We need more players coming back, man. Like when Isaac Curtis and I went in last year, Isaac had a lot more guys at his on the stage with him at his storytelling time than I did. A lot of guys in my era haven't been back in a long time. And they're still trying to find guys' numbers and emails and getting guys back. But I tell guys all the time, this kind of a new Bengals. It's a new way of doing things. It's new people leading the charge, new fresh ideas with Elizabeth and Katie, the things they're doing. So, but as far as guys going in, so many guys, man, it's hard, man. Like, I even felt last year, I'll tell you the story. I felt last year, it was almost kind of, I felt like a survivor's remorse last year at the gathering because there were so many guys that I looked up to as a young player. You know, I tell Reggie Williams all the time, I said, man, I thought in 1988, I was in Mobile, Alabama, and we got a lot of Bengal games down there for some reason. I was a big Bengal fan in the 88 Super Bowl year. I thought Reggie Williams was the freaking mayor of Cincinnati because every time I was seeing him, he would be in the suit outside of downtown Cincinnati. But what I found out was I was a kid. He was protesting for the strike years, 87, 86, 87, 88. So, but I would always see him in suits and tires, but he was a city councilman, right? So mm-hmm. as a kid, I said, that guy's the mayor of Cincinnati, and he's playing football. So guys like that with him, but also, you know, I played with a guy like Corey Dillon, who did so much for this organization. To me, is one of the all-time great running backs in NFL history, if you ask me. You got him, man. You got Ocho. I got Tim Crumrock, guys I knew in 88 Super Bowl year. So it's a hard thing for me. I was even one of the guys last year on Twitter saying, don't vote for guys my era so soon, because there were so many guys before us that paved the way for us to be here that I thought should be a long time ago. And I really wish the vote would be more than just two guys, because it's a hard deal, man. You know, it's a hard deal. Like I said, I felt survivor's guilt up there with Isaac Curtis last year. Like, I shouldn't be with Isaac Curtis. Like, Isaac Curtis should be with some guys in this era, and they should have been in years ago. So it's a hard thing for me, but it also, for the guys that go in, it's a great experience, man. Our fans are so great. I think our fans are the ones that kind of help push this along. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm pushing more of my guys to start coming back from my era, because, you know, guys kind of had a bad taste and they left. But I think the Bengals are really doing a good job of trying to turn it around. I think the more they can keep doing, the more they can keep reaching out, bringing guys back for these kind of ceremonies would be a great thing for us, because we are behind, you know.
It's tough. You're right, because I look and I'm just looking at the 13 now. Like Jim Breach, James Brooks, Tim Crumrye, like you mentioned, Legend. Bob Trumpy, Reggie Williams. They should have already been in.
Trumpy should be he's a legend, bro.
Yeah,
he's a legend. I know it. It should be like right now. It should be like those guys, just.
Lamar Parrish. I didn't mention him. Another Lamar one. Parrish. And so, should it be age based or should it be accolades? Because I'll be honest, I don't want to compare Corey Dillon and James Brooks necessarily, because Brooks should have gotten in when Corey was still playing. You know,
that's why I want to have a conversation with the Bengals. Like, yo, man, like, y'all can stop this. Like, let's just stop this, because it gets too personal. Like, it gets too personal. Like, no one wants to compare James Brooks and Corey against each other. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and like I said, no one wants to compare those guys and say who should be in more. Because also, too, you run the risk of today's fans. Like, I have no idea who the ticket base holders are. I don't know if it's an older crowd or newer crowd. But a lot of people didn't see some of the guys play, but some of the guys saw him play. And like I said, I wish the Bengals would just stop this. And I hate it, man. Come on, let's just, because it gets too hard and too personal. We're at a real fragile time right now as an organization. We're trying to get guys into the Hall of Fame. So happy that Kenny Raleigh's going in. You know, I think we should honor as many of that guys as we should. I mean, and because you know, Corey Dillon should be getting national recognition for Hall of Fame votes. You know what I mean? But at the same
time, he's not even mentioned.
Not even mentioned. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not even mentioned. So, but at the same time, in our world, in the Bengals world, we've had some great running backs like James Brooks before him that should get honored as well too. So I think it should be. I wish it'd just be just a group of guys, eight guys, man, and we kind of catch up. But the sentiment, I will say this right here, the sentiment was, they say, well, if it's eight, those eight guys wouldn't feel as prestige as the two guys going in a year. And I said, they would, they would. I mean, eight going in the Ring of Honor is still a Ring of Honor. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it's a real big deal. I mean, you know, and I had tears in my eyes last year when I went through it. As I saw my name come down, and I wish all those guys before me should have been have felt that feeling.
That's Bengals legend Willie Anderson. Make sure you check out that entire interview on Cincinnati Bengals Talk on YouTube. I'm James Erpine. The Reds cruising. We will discuss them with Chad Dotson coming up at 5:05. But until then, it's time for Brenneman and Jones on Baseball. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully Well, you're headed home, headed to happy hour, but headed to celebrate what should be an extended weekend for most. I know Mo specifically is happy after the Reds 9-0 over the Cubs in their series opener in Chicago. And they jumped on him early and dominated throughout. 19 hits, Hunter Green, the story. 6 innings, 11 strikeouts, gets his first win of the season. No hits, which, let's go, Hunter. Huge, huge day for him. For more on the Reds, this win, and so much more, let's welcome in Chad Dotson of Cincinnati Magazine. You can follow him on Twitter, at DotsonC, and he's on with us now. Chad, I appreciate the time. I can't tell you because, let's pull back the curtain here. We didn't know exactly when the Reds game was going to end, but we timed this out about as perfectly as we could.
It was perfect, and what a perfect day to be talking about the Reds.
No doubt about it. Let's dive in. Let's start with Hunter Green, because you know it's been an up and down start to this season for him, and he hasn't always had the support when he's had good outings. But this certainly his best outing of the year. What did you see from him? Because he was electric, and I was on air for most of it. But what I got to see, he was on his A game tonight.
Just absolutely dominating. He threw too many pitches early, and that's a thing that he struggles with and is going to struggle with. He's just 23 years old, but just when he's on, he's on. Some of these pitches, he was just making hitters look silly, and the stuff he has is just, it's as electric as anything I've seen out of a starting pitcher in Cincinnati, maybe ever. I mean, it's just, today was a glimpse of what he can be. Again, he doesn't need to be more efficient. And he's going to get there. I have no doubt that he'll get there. It's frustrating when he's not pitch efficient right now. But, man, when you see what him at his best, he's making the best hitters in the world look silly. And it's just, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the takeaway is this Reds team. Obviously, no one was expecting them to win 90 games or anything like that this year. But be competitive, be fun, and show progress. And Hunter Green was probably at the tip of anybody's tongue when you talk about that progress. And in days like today, encourage you for the future, I would say, is to say, all right, there is going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's led by this 23-year-old.
Oh, I'm telling you, there is a light at the end of this tunnel. He is going to be maybe not as good as everyone wants him to be, but he is going to be a great big league pitcher. I have no doubt about it. And for those fans that are getting a little nervous because he's not perfect yet, I say be patient. Again, he's still a kid. But we need some days like this that kind of help people remember, oh, yes, that's the Hunter Green that everyone's been raving about for years. It's fun to watch when he puts it together. I'm looking forward to him putting it more together in the coming years. But when that happens, he's going to be one of the elite pitchers in the National League.
Chad Dotson is our guest, Cincinnati Magazine. James Rapine in for Mo today here on ESPN 1530. Reds beat the Cubs 9-0. In Wrigley, improved to 21-29 on the season. Chad, looking at Hunter, the no-hit part of this, and I want to stress it because he was dominant. You're right, some too many pitches early in the game, and that's why he didn't get to stay in longer. No-hitter, though, through 6. Would you have kept him in, or are you still taking the long-term view here? Because it's always tough. I think the Reds probably made the right decision. David Bell made the right decision, but I know I was tempted to say, hey, just let him stay out there until he gives up a hit.
Well, I would have been tempted too. And that's the fan, you know, that loves the no-hitters. But he'd thrown 110 pitches, and it's not like there's any magic number of pitches. A lot of people say, oh, you can't let him throw more than 100. I think it's silly to just have a blanket statement like that. But once you get up in that area, 110, you are pushing it, and like you said, the long-term view really needs to be more important. But I just know as a fan, I was thinking, oh, you know, I wish he could go back out there because I want to see him go after this. I want to see a kid like that in a situation like that where, you know, there's more eyes on him. And I think he'll be fine, but I would not be surprised if at some point in the coming years we get to see that. I really believe he has that kind of ability.
Chad Dotson is our guest. Matt McClain, obviously, huge day for him. Spencer Steer, I mean, this offense, 19 hits. They racked him up early, often. And, man, when you combine that hitting with that kind of pitching, well, you get this result, a 9-0 win.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Matt McClain and Spencer Steer. Those are guys. Tyler Stevenson had three hits and a couple of RBIs. These are some of these kids, and there's some more that need to be up here soon, I think, that make this team, even if they're not particularly good, although they're closer to being in this division race than most people realize, I think. But even if they're not good, they're generally fun on a daily basis, and they keep us tuning in, and that's a good thing, because if you're not going to be good, at least give us something to be interested in, and they are interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the big difference this year compared to last year at this stage of the season, is I am interested. I certainly find myself way more curious and paying more attention, even though it isn't my primary job to pay attention to the Reds. I have much more this year than last season because they are more interesting and they are fun, even if they aren't winning a bunch of games. And they're still winning more than they did last year, for what it's worth. I'm not poo-pooing that.
Right, they are. And the reason it's interesting, I think, is a lot more of these kids. You know, Matt McClain has just been a revelation to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just he's looking like the big leagues are just an extension of what he was doing in AAA in some ways. And because you have those young guys that give you some hope, Hunter Green we're talking about, obviously, as well. It makes you want to tune in more. And you know, you look up, and the Reds are only 4.5 games out of first. They're only a game and a half out of third. They're 5.5 out of first. They're 4.5 out of the wild card race. They're not that far away from me. Maybe let's have to acquire some pitching and then bring up Ellie De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion Strand, and let's just see what happens. The division's bad. Why not go for it?
Yeah, I agree. I think now is the time to continue to bring up some of those young guys, and that would be the next step for me. You're fun now. I think you have a product that, even if fans aren't realizing it yet, will. The more you're consistent with it, you're only 50 games into the year. Is that the next step for this team, just to continue to bring up these young guys, continue to develop them? Because you're right, McClain is one of those guys that got headlines, and he's delivered thus far.
That has to be the next step, and it's the only way that the Reds are going to, I think, generate a whole lot of enthusiasm amongst the fan base. Hunter Green's the type of guy that you might go out to the stadium to watch as he develops. Ellie De La Cruz is absolutely a guy that you go out to the stadium to watch. The top prospect in baseball, doing just insane things at AAA on a daily basis. Now, I don't criticize the Reds much for not bringing him up yet. They know more than the Joe fan about what it takes to develop a guy and what he needs to specifically work on. But I'll just say, as a hitter, he looks like he can handle it anywhere on the world today. And selfishly, as a fan, I just want to see him in the red and white uniform in Cincinnati. So those are the things that are going to get fans excited to get back to the park, I think. And with this talent that's coming up, as we've seen a little bit this year, a few more wins, start making progress towards actually having a team that's relevant again in Cincinnati.
He's Chad Dotson. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DotsonC. Next couple of days, obviously, Red still in Wrigley. What are you hoping to see? Obviously, you want to see them handle business and continue to win. But the next couple of days, what are you going to have your eye on?
Well, most of what I'm looking for is what I always look for, which is I need the Reds to win 9-0 in each of the next 2 days. Because beating the Cubs, even if you're in last place, there's very little on earth better than beating the Cubs. No, it's going to be, it's good to see the Reds go on the road after a tough homestand, getting swept by the Yankees, and then splitting a series with St. Louis.
Yeah.
But, seeing this team continue to grow, I'm looking to see how Graham Ashcraft comes back from some rough outings lately. We have Ben Williamson, Brandon Williamson going tomorrow. He's been better than anyone expected as a rookie lefty in his first two big league starts. So, again, it's all about the kids. It's all about the kids with this team. If you can accept that they're fun but they're flawed, then I think you can enjoy watching this team.
I love it. I love the way you put that. He is Chad Dotson. Follow him on Twitter at DotsonC. Check out his work in Cincinnati Magazine. Chad, I appreciate the time as always, man. Be well.
Always fun talking to you, James. Thank you.
Good stuff there from Chad. And Reds, if you're just joining us, James Erpine in for Mo here on ESPN 1530. 9-0 winners over Chicago, wire to wire. Got 2 runs in the first inning, 1 in the third, 3 in the fourth, 1 in the fifth, 2 in the ninth. The poured on 19 hits. The Cubs finished with 2 hits, but Hunter Green, a no-hitter through 6, through 110 pitches, 11 strikeouts, And man, whether it's him, Spencer Steer, all of these young guys, they are fun. They might not be great, but they are fun, and they're developing, like Chad had to say. So, got to be honest, the Reds, they have at least had me raise my eyebrow towards them a little bit during the first 50 games of the year, because I want you to be interesting, like Chad said, and they've been interesting thus far. All right, up next, let's switch gears a little bit. Welcome in Mike Petraglia of CLNS Media to talk some Bengals. We will do that as we roll on. James Erpine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. Let's switch gears. Let's talk a little Bengals because, yeah, the Reds were a winner, but the Bengals certainly on the minds of many. And let's welcome in Mike Petraglia, CLNS Media. You can follow him on Twitter at Trags. Mike, I appreciate the time as always, man. How you doing?
Got my lawn cut, and I'm heading into Memorial Day weekend with some momentum. So I'm very, very pleased that I've gotten something done today.
Love it. Cold one popped yet or no?
No. I saved that for the weekend.
Not well, it's about to be the weekend, Trags, but that's okay. I get it.
Yeah, I understand that, but I have to pace myself, James. I'm not a young buck like you are.
There we go. Yeah, pacing yourself. All right. Well, let's start with this theory. I'll say theory idea that Mike Florio came up with. I'm sure you saw it. I played the audio earlier this hour, but the idea that the Bengals would sign Joe Burrow to a long-term extension and the contract would vary year to year based on the cap and what the cap would be. And he would essentially get 16% of the cap each year. And as the cap rises, his salary would rise. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's foul? What do you make of that idea?
Creative. And as I've said many times before, and you've heard me say this, I don't think anybody manages the cap any better than the Blackburns. And they are very, very litigious when it comes to making sure that all of their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed when it comes to cap responsibility. And I think if Joe Burrow's in for it and it makes the Bengals' job of keep retaining talent for him easier, then I think he's all for it. Remember, the key, I think, for Joe Burrow is how much money does he get upfront guaranteed. To me, that's really the big, big deciding factor in when this deal gets done, I think. I don't have any inside information on that, but just given the history of other contracts similar to this, I think the more you guarantee early on in the contract, the better the chance that you're going to sign the player. And in this particular case, I think Burrow has been very forthcoming in saying that he wants to work with the team to retain as much talent as possible, because as he told us a couple of weeks ago, it doesn't do the quarterback any good if he doesn't have good players to throw the ball to.
Trags, you go back and you've been following this team. You go back and back and much farther back than I do. Yeah, that's an age joke that I'm going to continue to make. You go way back. But one of the points that Florio made was that if anyone was willing to do a deal based on the salary cap, despite the NFL not wanting it to happen because it is unprecedented and it does kind of change the way – I mean, it could completely change the way we view at least quarterback contracts moving forward. It would be Mike Brown. I hear that, and I kind of agree. And I think he may look at this and say, this is the way that we could keep him around, not for 4 years, but for 8 years. And I think that's the key for the Bengals. It's not the money. The money is the money. We kind of know what he's going to make per year and all of those things. And you're right, the guaranteed money.
It's the guaranteed money, though, James. There's the money, and then there's the guaranteed money.
No doubt.
And I think, I mean, that's significant. And, you know, let's not pretend that it's not. Now, the annual average value, that can be played with. I see your point there.
Yeah, but my point is with Mike, is he may look at it and say, I get it, Roger might not want me to do this, but this is what's best for us, and this is what's going to make Joe Burrow happy. Obviously, the guaranteed money aspect of it matters. And I think we kind of know what he's going to get guaranteed-wise. He's going to get more than – his contract is probably going to be more guaranteed money let me think about this as I'm saying it. Actually, I agree, especially if it's a long-term deal, like 8 years, which is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Try to find a way to get that done. He's going to get more guaranteed money than Deshaun Watson did because it's double the length. Like, I don't think that's correct. Crazy.
I think that's accurate. I would, I have thought all along that he is probably, if those are the parameters, okay, and if that's the benchmark, then you're looking at $240 million guaranteed, $240 to $250. The question becomes, of course, James, do the Bengals have that kind of cash on hand?
Yes.
And that, you know.
Oh, that, yeah.
Because as everybody knows by now, you have to have that money in escrow to be able to pay for the size of contract this is. You have to be able to pay the player up front with the cash in escrow. And if it's not, then you can't guarantee that much money.
Mike Petralia is our guest, CLNS Media, James Erpine, Informo. What do you mean, Trags? They have sponsorships on every gate now. There's a sponsor on your desk at Paycor Stadium. Of course they have the money.
Yes.
I actually don't worry about that. I think they have the money. I think there was a concern a few years ago, and then they were like, all right, let's get this thing going, and they got it going. And that stadium money, all of that, all of the sponsorship deals, I think they're good to go.
Well, then, if they're good to go, then
and maybe I'm wrong. Indeed. I'm speculating. It's not like Katie called me and told me that. I'm clearly speculating.
We're both speculating here because nobody keeps their numbers closer to the vest than the Blackburns, and for good reason. I mean, they should do that. They're among the best business people in sports, and people, you know, on the outside of Cincinnati will hear that and laugh, but they are. They negotiate as smartly as any owners in sport. Now, that has not always produced winning teams. I think they'll also acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to beat the Blackburns and the Brown family at the bargaining table. You're just not going to do it. And that's why Katie is regarded as one of the, you know, best cap experts and CBA experts in the National Football League. It's why she's on so many committees at the NFL, because she is well respected.
Yeah.
You know, the deal's going to get done. The Joe Burrow deal will get done. It will be, to your point and to Florio's point, fascinating to see if the Bengals set a new standard in NFL negotiating for paying a player a certain percentage of the cap.
The Cardinals released DeAndre Hopkins, and that's my interesting segue into T. Higgins. Not necessarily saying, hey, T. Higgins is going to get released, because he will not. But do you think the Bengals keep him around? Let's say in 2025, do they keep him around and sign him to a long-term extension?
Yes. I think they, first of all, they know T. Higgins. Second of all, if you believe the reports that were out this week, they regard T. Higgins as an elite number one type receiver. And I happen to agree with them in their player evaluation of said player. I think T. Higgins is a rare commodity, and he is a proven commodity. You hold on to him, and you do everything you can to hold on to him. The obvious, you know, catch point here, the tripping point, is David Mulugeta. Can you finally get a deal done with a David Mulugeta client? And I think they can, but you know, they're going to have to show T the money, and it's going to be north of 100. It's going to be, you know, a 9-figure contract. I don't think there's any question about that. Again, it'll probably come down to years and amount of money guaranteed.
Mike Petralia, CLNS Media, host of the Jungle Roar podcast, is our guest. James Erpine from O Today on ESPN 1530. All right, so from that, one of their own, T. Higgins, to maybe a veteran that they could sign, is there a veteran out there, free agent-wise, that makes sense to you that the Bengals should target? Because I look at this AFC, Trags, and it's an arms race. I mean, it is so dang talented. There's so many great quarterbacks. DeAndre Hopkins is probably going to end up in the AFC. I could see him going to Kansas City or Buffalo or in the division. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces, so I don't think you can ever have enough talent, and obviously the Bengals are one of the top teams in the conference. Do you think that they should add another veteran, and if so, who comes to mind?
Are you talking specifically about receiver position?
No, free agents in general.
Okay, running back, Zeke Elliott. Didn't we hear
Whoa.
So much? There was so much smoke about Zeke, you know, when he became a free agent, that he would make so much sense as a pass protector in front of Joe Burrow. I still think the Joe Mixon situation is fluid. I don't think there's anything guaranteed about his roster position. I do think that they've been I still don't believe it'll be at $12.8 million a year. I just don't see, Mike, based on what we just said 5 minutes ago, I don't see the Browns and the Blackburns paying that kind of cash to Joe Mixon. But, you know, maybe this is one of those cases where Mike steps in and says, you know, we've been true to Joe Mixon. Mixon's been loyal to us. You know, I want to keep him. But that being said, if Zeke Elliott at age 28 has anything left in the tank and he can still run and he can still pass protect, he makes to me the most sense of anybody on that list.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Zeke would be a really good fit in Cincinnati. Let's go from current Bengals to past Bengals and Bengals legends. The Bengals announced their Ring of Honor nominees for this year, 13 nominees. Like I said, you go way, 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 way back. So which two, if you had a vote, Trags, would you vote in?
I think this is pretty easy this year to me. Boomer Esiason, 1988 NFL MVP, led the Bengals to the 12-4 season, Super Bowl 23, came within 34 seconds of a Super Bowl title, was really the tip of the spear, if you will, of one of the most creative offenses in the National Football League. Really the original no-huddle offense before the K-Gun in Buffalo. It was Boomer Esiason running Stan Wyche's offense. To me, Boomer Esiason's a no-brainer. I mean, he would be the choice. The next one to me is a personal favorite, and that's Leapin' Lamar Parrish. I know people talk rightfully so about Ken Riley being a Hall of Famer, which he is going to be later this summer in Canton. But when you take a look at the numbers that Lamar Parrish had over his career, and mostly in Cincinnati, he had 47 interceptions, I believe 38 of them in Cincinnati. He was a four-time Pro Bowler, three of those appearances in Cincinnati. Two appearances while he was with the Bengals before he got traded to Washington, an All-Pro, two appearances as an All-Pro. I just think, and one of the premier punt returners in the National Football League. Anybody who remembers Leapin' Lamar like I do remembers how electric he was when he caught the ball on a punt return. And everybody stopped what they were doing. And you know, everybody remembers the Chicago Bears punt returner of a couple of years ago, you know,
Devin
actually
Hester.
About 15 years. Yes. And to me, he was Devin Hester before Devin Hester. He was that electric. It's Lamar Parrish. He's my other choice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Trags, that's why we bring you on, because you offer great perspective. Thanks for jumping on ahead of a Memorial Day weekend. And pop a cold one for me now. It is the weekend. I'm in here. You're not. You're in the sun. Enjoy it, my man. Thanks for coming on.
All right, James. Take care. Always a pleasure.
Great stuff there. That's Mike Petraglia, CLNS Media, talking all things Bengals. And whew, he brings the heat, as always, with his Bengals Ring of Honor. All 13 guys should be in, no doubt. I would certainly want to see Chad get in sooner rather than later. Chad who? Chad Ochocinco. We're going to go from Trags and discussing Bengals Ring of Honor to a guy who's already in the Bengals Ring of Honor. Willie Anderson joins us next. James Rapine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. Final segment of the show, James Rapine in for Mo. This is ESPN 1530. And let's get to Willie Anderson, because he's coming to town next week for his Willie Anderson Lineman Academy camp. And you can sign up today. There is a link on his Twitter, at BigWillie7179. And it's at Lakota East High School, May 30th and 31st. But I caught up with Willie, and this entire interview is on my YouTube channel, Cincinnati Bengals Talk. I asked him how he felt about the offensive line going into this season, because it's been a talking point for quite some time, and they added Orlando Brown Jr. in March.
Well, you know, Andrew Whitworth and Levi Jones, we always joked about
how we thought playing offensive tackle for the Bengals is one of the hardest jobs in the NFL, especially when you have a high level quarterback. You know, we had a high level guy in Carson. They have one now in Joe. So the fans, organizations, everybody across the world are expecting you to protect that guy. And I'm sure Anthony, those guys felt the same way when they had Boomer, who was a league MVP. So we've had the history of having, you know, pretty great quarterbacks with Kenny Anderson and Boomer and all these guys, and Carson, now Joe Burrow, you know, should be the face of the league. That's a hard topic for alignment, you know, a hard task for alignment. Hey, it's our job, and everyone in Bengal Nation is trusting us to keep these guys clean. So, you know, I think right now, you know, they have a good problem. They're loaded right now with talent. And I think it's more now of, you know, does a guy like Jonah want to come over and play right tackle? You know, I think we saw on Instagram yesterday, Lyle is ahead of schedule. You know what I mean? If he's ahead of schedule, here's a guy who's a Pro Bowl player at that position. It's not a position he has to relearn or anything like that. So it's going to be very interesting. I think I've been hearing Jackson Carmen is going to be vying for the spot too. But, you know, you got three good guys right there that are very competitive, that have played some high-level football. And it's going to be interesting, you know. And I think with Jonah's proven his point that he's a solid offensive lineman who's played in a great deal of games for the Bengals and gave his heart to the Bengals. Now, is he going to have the mindset to come over and play right tackle? And I was telling somebody earlier that it's not as easy as people think just switching spots, because you're not changing one side of your body to the other side, your dominant side. So for years, at left tackle, Jonah's dominant side has been his right leg, you know, right foot. So now, changing his positions, he got to change over now to his left leg at right tackle. And that's a huge difference change. I think the more reps he get at it, the better. But I've been hearing, I don't know if he's in camp right now, but to get those valuable reps. So it'll be very interesting to see how everything goes at that spot right there.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One, didn't you play left tackle when you were a rookie?
I came in as a left tackle, yes. Yes.
So you know firsthand how it is to switch sides. And Jonah is rehabbing. He had a knee procedure to help alleviate the potential of a dislocated kneecap, which he dealt with last year and played through. Yeah, I think it's interesting because you mentioned the Lael video, and it's like, whoo, he does. He looks like he's ahead of schedule. And I think he would be their right tackle had he not gotten injured. I don't think this would even be really a question, even with the addition of Orlando Brown Jr. I think they would have said, oh, well, we have our guy heal up, because he played through multiple issues last year. He had an ankle issue, a back injury. And so I think that's a huge question mark. But you're right, at least there's multiple names. And in past years, it was like late-round draft picks that were unproven. Well, Jonah Williams is proven. He might not be an all-pro, but he's proven.
Yes.
Well, same thing. So you're dealing with proven commodities and then a young guy in Jackson Carmen who does seem to be in better shape this year than past seasons.
Yeah, so those are all good things, man. You know, even, you know, Lyle, his video set the internet on fire in Bengals Nation. Everybody was happy. You know what I mean? That's good to see, man. So it's just going to be, you know, a guy like Jonah, who, like I said, who's been through the wars, had his up and down, but he's done a lot for the organization. It's going to be about, you know, if he wants to do that. I mean, I think we're all kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. I think he has to be at the minicamp, mandatory minicamps. I think we'll get a chance to see then, you know, his mindset and his ability to want to be at that position. So going forward, I think it's a good thing to have. I think eventually that spot has to get settled out and see who's going to be that guy. I think once that happens, I think a lot more things will start falling into place of who's going to be here, who's not going to be there.
It's the Willie Anderson Lineman Academy Summit coming to Lakota East High School May 30th and 31st. Make sure you sign up today. You mentioned Joe Burrow and in the great quarterbacks and the legacy that the Bengals have had. And you were on the team when Boomer came back for a year. And I know it was brief. And I know that was kind of an awkward situation with Jeff Blake in town as well, because he had kind of emerged as the guy. And then there were questions. They bring in Boomer for a year. But you've at least seen Boomer, even if it was his last season. Mm-hmm. You were obviously blocking for Carson for quite some time. What stands out about Joe Burrow to you from afar? Obviously, you're not in the locker room with him every day, but he's taken this organization to heights that I'm not sure anyone expected this early in his career.
Well, I got a chance to talk to Joe. There's a picture I have on my Instagram of us last year at training camp. We were riding the famous golf cart around, you know. And he stopped and started talking to me. I said, man, I want to thank you as a lineman, as a former lineman, as a lineman. I said, how you handle yourself during the games with your lineman? Because as offensive linemen, like, we always look and see which quarterback is really cool with his guys, which offensive lineman really ride with their quarterback. And sometimes, so I learned this from Boomer, you know, and when Boomer was a backup quarterback, he still acted as a starter. He would ask questions. He would support Jeff Blake. He would support us. He would be having after the game, parties at his house over in Kentucky. Just the lineman got his food and, you know, got some beers over there after the game, the lineman. And he was doing all the things that made him a guy that everyone liked. And Jeff Blake was the same way. But I learned from Boomer that even when you're down, you know, you still want to be that guy, that leader. And once he took over the spot, the lineman never wanted to be the guy that got Boomer hit. Because he was doing so many good things. So I remember after the Cowboys game, he started the Dallas Cowboys game. We beat Dallas that year. He came in and gave like every starter like $1,500. And I remember walking to Spinney Field, and somebody said, man, Boomer's trying to find him. I'm like, for what? So he got something for you. And so I was the first round pick year before, so I took my money and gave it to my backup. I split it with my backup. But I told Joe, I said, man, I saw things that you were getting, you know, you went through a beating the previous year. And I've never seen you get up one time and shame your lineman. Never seen you get up and throw the ball down at him, dog cuss him out. Because we're in a position where everyone's always dog cussing us out anyway. You know what I mean? It could be your O-line coach. It could be the fans who don't understand that wasn't my sack. That was on quarterback. And the fans think you get him killed. It was the QB's fault. Everything's the lineman's fault already. So when you see the quarterbacks who's constantly yelling at his lineman, fussing at him, you know, I can tell the linemen don't like those guys. But the guys who get respect, who the guy stands in the pocket, takes the beating, and stands up for the lineman and say, man, that sack was on me. Because the whole world want to say, it's the lineman's fault. We love the quarterback. But I've seen Joe take responsibility of sacks. I've seen him get his head beat in, never gets up, pouting, never gets up, showing his lineman up. Because all it takes is one time for him to get up and throw the ball to the ground and curse the lineman out for the entire stadium to hate every lineman on the damn field. Mm-hmm. And I said, Joe, I appreciate you, bro, for not doing that and having the character to where these guys want to step and fight for you. He said, man, I know it. He said, that's the reason I do it, because I got my guys back. And I want those guys to have my back. So for him to acknowledge that and to know that and to be aware of that, to me, is a quarterback's biggest trait, because those five guys have to bust their ass to protect you. You know what I mean? And I've seen guys not like guys, and you know, guys give sacks up, you know, my shoulder's hurting. I've seen the guys tap out on guys, but when the guys loved by the guys, you're going to play hurt, extra effort, give your body up for them. You know what I mean? And I've seen that with guys like with us with Carson, with us with John Kitna. And I see that right now with these guys right now. Joe's inspiring these guys. And because when your line plays inspired and your line knows that I got Joe Burrow back here, if I can give him 3 seconds, we're going to win this damn game, because the plays he's going to make in 3.5 seconds is going to be tremendous. So he gives guys confidence just by being there.
Willie Anderson is our guest. Yeah, I, as you were describing that, a couple of things came to mind. One, Joe Burrow, obviously his dad, Jimmy, was a college football coach. His older brothers played on the defensive side of the ball. I think he may just understand the team element better than anybody. Because I don't think I think I would lose my composure. I think most guys would with the 2021 season and how many hits he was taking. Yes. In a pass-first offense. I mean, he got sacked 9 times against Tennessee in the playoffs.
And just kept plugging it. And that was kind of mentality. But I think Joe will tell you, too, it's been said, too. I think it's been said by Zach, it's been said by Joe. you know, sometimes the sacks are on him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then sometimes they're on the line. So it's kind of an even deal. But I think just at sometimes, you know, when it does break down, he's had the right to kind of go crazy. And I've never seen him do it. I've seen him be frustrated, but I've never seen him show his guys up. And I've seen some of the quarterbacks, I think the QBs in the league take a beating and show their guys up, and they continue taking a beating. You know what I mean? But yeah, sometimes it's talent, sometimes just, you know, guys are better. But I think when you're QB at that position, when he understands that team aspect and how hard and how much trash the linemen already get, if he can just mention our names and build, because linemen watch the linemen, best believe they watch those interviews, and sure, they see the guys who always said me, I did this. They see that, but they also see the guys who are constantly saying, hey man, this win is brought today to by the O-line. The O-line did their job today. The O-line gave us a running game. The O-line gave us some time at critical points. And to me, that's one of Joe's biggest character traits to me that he has, because he can inspire all those guys together. And you can see it turned out into wins.
Great stuff there from Willie Anderson. That entire interview is on my YouTube channel at Cincinnati Bengals Talk. If you just Google it, you'll be able to see the Willie Anderson interview. I'm James Rapine, and that's going to do it for me. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. The Reds, big winners today in Chicago. Whew. It just, Hunter Green, congrats to him. His first win of the year, a no-hitter through six. So good stuff there. Shout out to Taryn Bland, today's producer, and have a safe Memorial Day weekend. I'm James Rapine. Thank you so much for listening right here on ESPN 1530.